And it's Thursday, November the 19th, 2015, and this is the Radio Free Northwest call-in show.
And of course, that was Harold Covington, and I am Don Welke. Yeah, the situation in Europe is rapidly devolving. It is going to hell quickly.
I didn't realize, but that fat bimbo Angela Merkel has been in power in Germany for almost 10 years.
Yeah, she's way past her expiration date.
Yeah, and everyone's moaning and groaning about how, oh, will Angela Merkel survive politically and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it doesn't really matter if she gets thrown out of the chancellor's office. Question is anybody going to actually do anything to get all those wogs out of there?
Well, she's a big obstacle. She's also a big cheerleader for totally open borders and welcoming all migrants into Germany and, by extension, into the rest of Europe.
You really wonder, you have to wonder, what is going on in the mind of somebody like that? The only thing I can figure is the woman is simply insane, or else she, honest to God, believes that it's part of her mission in life to make sure that the white race in general and the German nation in particular become extinct.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was motivating her, or she's a crypto-Jew and that's the explanation. On a more positive note, as a result of the bombing of that Russian airliner right after the Paris incident, the Russians announced that indeed it was a bomb that brought down the airliner, and they doubled their number of missions in Syria, their aerospace force missions. And the way they did it was to use long-range heavy bombers flying out of Russia over to the Middle East, bomb the hell out of them, and then fly back home. And apparently they're keeping that up, so they've actually doubled the number of daily strikes against ISIS positions in Syria.
Limbaugh had a point, and that is that the reaction of our illustrious Mulatto president has been pretty strange, even by Democrat standards. It's almost like he, honest to God, just has no interest at all in doing anything against ISIS or against Islamic extremism in general. To him, it's almost like it's not an issue. He's really more concerned about gay marriage and gun control. He made some announcement recently, which didn't get as much coverage as probably it should have done, to the effect that he was going to prioritize gun control during his last year in office. I'm, as you know, not the very biggest individual on conspiracy theory, but it gets to the point where you have to come to the realization that there really are only two possibilities here when you think about why these governments, ours and the European governments, are doing what they're doing, either just plain outright insanity, or else it really is some kind of long pre-planned conspiracy, and they've just decided they're going to go ahead and they're going to show us the rest of the script and implement the extinction of the white race, and they're getting less and less discreet about it.
That is pretty much the case as far as conspiracy explanations. I think I'll use the term conspiracy explanation rather than conspiracy theory, because conspiracy theory has some bad associations with it. The actual explanation is a conspiracy, and there's too much evidence. Too many people have said too much that it's actually out in the open, and you can actually prove it by quoting people in influential positions, well-known people. And it's pretty obvious that the Paris incident was a false flag. It has all the fingerprints on it. The fact that they were running a security exercise for the same thing that very day in France, just like on 9/11, they were doing a security exercise for airplanes running into skyscrapers. It's the same. Also, the magic passport that survived the explosion of the suicide bomber, also it matches the magic passport that survived the explosion of the plane when it hit one of the skyscrapers in New York City on 9/11. They're not even coming up with anything new. They're just repeating themselves.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the bomb squad being seen in the parking lot at the Alfred Murrah building just before the Oklahoma bombing. Things of this nature. I have to admit, some of this wilder stuff does seem to have some substantiation when you look into it.
It's also the big lie technique. It's so horrendous to think that the government is behind this that people reject that out of hand. It's, again, it's too horrific to believe, so people don't believe it. And that's one of the central elements of the big lie technique.
You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
This is Richard, and I'm in Virginia.
Oh, okay, Richard. You're the first caller. How's things out there in Virginia?
The weather's really good. There's a little upsetment out here about the Syrian refugees. They want to move in, and there's a lot of people calling the governor's office, McAuliffe, and stating their case that they're against it. But let's see what the governor does, though.
Is your governor there? I can't remember if he's a Republican or a Democrat.
I can't either.
Is he one of the 24, I think it is, governors that have already politely requested the federal government not to settle any Syrians in their state?
No. Matter of fact, he hasn't. That's what's causing a little angst out here among Virginians.
Out here in Washington State, Governor Inslee has actually done the opposite. He's publicly stated that he welcomes them all.
Well, he's a Democrat. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, unbelievable. I don't know what's with these politicians. It seems like, well, it's kind of obvious. It's behind the scenes. They have a different agenda. They get into office and the hell with what the people want. They're going to do what they're told to do, just like Obama. Just a figurehead, passing the message along.
Don and I were talking about this just before you called. It's reached the point now where any rational observer has to realize that we're faced with two choices. Either these people in government are just flat-out raving mad, or they are genuinely part of a conspiracy, a movement, a consensus, whatever you want to call it, that the white race has to be destroyed, and they are deliberately doing things according to a premeditated plan to make sure that that happens, because there just isn't any explanation. You can't really say that it's just sheer stupidity, because these people, in order to rise to their particular level of influence in government, can't be totally stupid. They have to have at least some general idea of what they're doing.
I agree. I don't think it's lack of intelligence at all. There is an agenda. Donald Trump, in some of his talks, he's politely calling them stupid, I think. What they're doing is actually treasonous. But there doesn't seem to be any kind of a mechanism to correct it. You would think that if an errant governor or senator, whoever, goes completely off the agenda that the public wants, you'd think there'd be some kind of a recall mechanism. I remember somewhere that they're trying to recall somebody or somebody was speaking on it, but they said it's a really tough process to get anybody recalled. I think there was a big hullabaloo up there in Wisconsin when they recalled Walker.
Well, didn't recall him. He actually won the second election, the recall election.
That's right. It never came to fruition, but they all cheered when they didn't get him out when he maybe should have been put out. We've got a real problem in this country. If we're going to stick to the rules the way they were intended, it seems like nobody's doing it. I don't know what the answer is. Revolution? Withdrawal?
Well, we do, and that's what our programs and what our organization's all about. We do have the answer, and that is a sovereign white homeland here in the Pacific Northwest. It's now become pretty obvious that the system as it exists is totally beyond salvage. And we really have no choice if we want to survive. The question I'm thinking about a lot, especially in recent years, is do we really want to survive, or can we just not be bothered?
I don't know. Me, I would love to see the white race survive and be contained within itself to develop. I think this diversity and multiculturalism, the term arrested development comes in mind, kind of stymied. We're putting out fires, trying to find ways to somehow survive when we should be moving ahead, and we don't move ahead. And the few instances in history, well, there's more than a few instances in history where the Aryan race did have a chance to resist outside influences. Great civilizations came about and great advances took place.
Well, something I mentioned in a recent Radio Free Northwest, I am personally convinced that one of the reasons that England became such a great power, not just militarily or colonially, but culturally, one of the reasons we speak English is basically the international language today. One of the reasons that the British eventually built their empire, so forth and so on, was the fact that between 1290 and 1655, the Jews were not allowed into England, and England was able to develop through a very crucial period of human history, the late Middle Ages and the Renaissance, and on into the modern world, without Jews.
And the sun never set on the English Empire because of it.
At one stage, literally true.
And I think Arthur Kemp, March of the Titans, I think he outlined a series of civilizations that were of Aryan blood.
Got another caller here, Richard. Hang on a minute, let's see.
Sure.
You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
Hi, I'm a friend of the communications with you, Harold. My name's...
Oh, yeah, okay. Do you want your actual name on here?
No, just call me Joe.
Our topic tonight, sir, is the crisis in Europe, and I think you're probably pretty well qualified to talk about that since you're in Europe. For those of you who are listening, this gentleman is a fairly well-placed individual in the United Kingdom, so I think you're kind of on the edge of things over there. The general topic tonight is the invasion of Europe by Syrian so-called refugees, etc., etc. But I understand you guys over there and... Okay, we now have two people in our conference call. And let me just redo what I was saying for Richard's benefit. I'm sorry, I kind of went off at the mouth there and I forgot that Richard couldn't hear us. We've got Richard for Virginia and gentleman using the name from the United Kingdom in England.
Well, I've also got Ian Smith's second cousin with me, Harold.
Okay. But what time is it over there?
1:15 in the morning.
Since you guys have stayed up, we certainly need to let you express your views. And I'm always glad to do this, by the way, for our European comrades. I haven't actually put it up on the website yet, but I recently used my YouTube channel to put up a video from one of our comrades in Ireland protesting against the racial situation there. Anytime anyone in Europe, and in the British Isles especially, does speak out on the racial situation, they do so at no little risk to themselves. I'm always glad to help you guys out. Gentlemen, I understand that you guys had a really heavy so-called refugee problem over there even before this fall when all the Syrian mess started. What is the situation like down there in Calais? How many of them are getting through the channel? I keep hearing or reading on the net stories about the channel highway having to be closed and basically this huge refugee camp in Calais, which is causing all kinds of trouble for the French, and mobs of them rushing the channel trying to run all 20 miles to Dover or wherever it is. And so how's that looking?
Well, the fact is the channel tunnel is actually awash with refugees, so-called. And
they're actually living in the tunnel?
No, they're coming to our island. And it's an absolute disgrace. But I do believe it's not about race, it's about space. And I believe that, I think that action should be taken. And one of the things that I would say from that background, I think it's abhorrent that Her Majesty's government actually think that it's a good idea to have all these ways and strays coming into the country. Do not get me wrong. If people have a genuine need, then I would help them. But I don't believe the majority of them do.
Our government's just laying all sorts of sordid biological trash all up our island. We haven't heard much about the Calais crisis in the news. There was a lot about it in the summer. Our media is like informing us of what the situation is like at Calais now. The island's population is projected to rise up to 70 million in the next 12 years. Compared to countries like Denmark, which has a population of about 5 million, and Sweden, which has a population of 8 million, I mean, we're just a small island and we've got 70 million people living there.
That's not going to be possible. I've lived in the United Kingdom myself. I've lived in London intermittently in the 80s and the early 90s. The last time I actually lived in London was in 91, if I recall correctly. And it was crowded, and it was like a rabbit warren even then. My first stint in London was in the very early 80s, about 82, and I found it fairly pleasant. But even then, it was obvious it was getting overrun with all kinds of weird third worlders. And when I came back in, like, 91, I was appalled at how much the situation had deteriorated just in about 9 or 10 years. And that was over 20 years ago, and I cannot imagine what it must be like to live in the United Kingdom right now. And I understand that housing is almost impossible to obtain. I understand you've got bedroom taxes on anyone with an empty bedroom in their home has to pay basically a fine to the government because they're not putting up some immigrant from Somalia or Benin or something in their spare bedroom, and that there is a government program being started to move elderly people out of their homes and into nursing homes so that the homes can be basically seized for immigrants. And I just can't imagine what it's like. Generally speaking, what is life in the United Kingdom as a whole like now that, in essence, whites are well on the way to becoming a minority?
Our government keeps knocking down all sorts of social projects to build housing. It's always more housing, more and more housing all the time to house all these incoming immigrants. We live in London, but we live in the whitest borough in London.
Where was that, if I may ask?
That's like on the right, on the far east of London. Now, the white British are a minority in London. The 11th census, it was revealed that whites were 45% of London. So white British were 45%. So I think whites are about 50% of London today. The other 50% is non-white. And it's like, if we travel down the road just into inner London, it's unrecognisable. I used to work in a place called and I go home on the bus. and there'd only be two white people on the bus, me and one other guy, and the rest of the carriage was full up of Kaffirs and Muslims and all sorts.
I think they're bad people. But I will say this, that I think that one has to have a limit on how many people you have in your country. And I think that our country is full to the brim. And I do not believe that it is a good thing to have black being brought over here. And neither do I believe it is a good thing to have the Arabs or anyone else populating this country. We have to have a sensible immigration policy in this country. And that's why I've been UKIP for 23 years. And I believe that it's a sensible policy. It's in line with the United States of America. It's also in line with Australia and also New Zealand. You can't just keep allowing other people to come into your country without any limitation. And it's as simple as that.
How do you define other people? How do you define the people you don't want? If you're not using race as a basis, what are you using?
Other people.
Anyone who's not British?
Well, we need to have a limited migration system.
I think the British found in the late 50s and early 60s that although they caused trouble when they had Jamaicans and Africans and Hindus and whatnot living there in fairly small numbers, 2, 3, 4, 5% of the population, there was a lot of irritation and they caused problems, but it was livable. The problem is the floodgates are now open in the UK, as Enoch Powell predicted, and the whites are simply being overrun. Now, what I'm curious about is what you gentlemen think is going to happen. Before you gentlemen called, one of the things that I was talking about with Don here is that any rational observer now has to look at what the governments of Europe are doing, what our own government here in the United States is doing, and you're faced with two choices. Either the people that control these governments are just barking mad, or else they are acting on a pre-planned agenda, the goal of which is the extermination of the white race as a whole, but also Western civilization, all white nations, borders, cultures, etc. I think it's pretty clear that these regimes that are now in power in Europe, including that in the UK, are not going to stop. They're not going to change their programs, their policies. You have these so-called right-wing parties like the Front National in France and so forth who are yelling and screaming and hollering in the streets and threatening to win elections. But my question is, at what point is the democratic posturing and the rhetoric going to stop, and at what point is someone going to do something to physically remove these creatures from Europe? And I just can't see that happening under any of the present governments. I think there's going to be a lot of talk and a lot of sound and fury, but at the end of the day, they're still going to be sitting there in Europe, maybe in camps, maybe in railroad stations, maybe in houses that they've physically forced the local white people out of, but they're still going to be there. So in your perception, gentlemen, what is going to happen in the next year, 2 years or so in Britain and in Europe as a whole?
There'll be no action taken at all to remove the immigrants in Britain and Europe as a whole in the next 2 years. So I foresee just what we've got now, but worse. I think this comes down to a question of courage for the white man. If the white man has the courage to do something about this, and that means there's no way out of this but violent revolution, as far as I can tell now. It's beyond politics. It's too late. But it doesn't seem that the white man has the courage to do what the Muslims are doing and sort of just to fight and die for his ideals anymore.
We have that in spades, no pun intended, over here in America. It's just like the white people here, I think, have come to an understanding that they're headed for extinction if current policies continue and if the current government continues to hold power. And it's like we just can't be bothered. Those that are aware of the crisis are basically too weak and timid and frightened and confused to do anything. They are leaderless. They are rudderless. It's ironic that we allegedly own in this country 300 million firearms in private hands, and I have come to rather despair of ever seeing them taken out of the closet. I hope that will happen before I shuffle off this mortal coil. But the thing with Europe is that you don't have the type of space that we have over here. The thing is, America and Canada are very big countries. They're huge, and there's always some place for the white man to run to. In Europe, you don't have that. I've lived in the UK. I've seen how the people there live and the type of space you do have. You say the British kept saying, well, we have to build. From what I recall, they can't build too much more without just completely paving over the entire island of Britain and turning it into one big council flat. Where exactly does that Whitehall crowd think they're going to build all this new housing?
One of the things that I would say is that the fact is we haven't got enough room on the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And the fact is they've fucked up their own countries, and I don't want to come and fuck up our country. And if they love their country, well, go back and help your country. But these people don't help their country and try and make their own country work.
I agree absolutely, but I'm familiar enough with the situation in Britain, so I can tell you right now, there is no jobs to support these people, there is no infrastructure, just what they consume in the way of things like electricity and sewage and so forth and so on, they will be perpetual charges on the government. The government is going to have to support them probably almost like the Palestinian refugees, 1, 2, 3 generations. And I'm just really puzzled as to what these people who are running the United Kingdom think they're going to do with it all. And I suppose the question I'm really trying to get at is what's going to happen when the white people of Britain finally understand that this is it. There is going to be no help from the government for them, that the government fully intends for these people to stay and take everything they have, and that every legal avenue of protest is blocked off. For example, I think I may remove this Rhodesian gentleman's name out of this podcast when I podcast it because I don't want to get him in trouble. Let's face it, right now, just for being on the phone line with me, you guys are looking at 7 years in prison. And you've got these laws that effectively eliminate any possibility of legal protest against this situation. And in essence, the British government is telling you and has been telling you for several generations, screw you white people in Britain, you're not going to be allowed to argue with this whole multiracial thing. We're going to give it to you. You will be a multiracial nation. We're going to jam it down your throats. And if you dare to utter so much as a squeak of protest, we're going to put you in prison. And this is the situation that exists all throughout Europe. What is going to happen when the penny finally drops and the remaining white population of Britain and other European countries realize that their death warrant has been signed, quite literally in many cases? What I'm getting at here is, do you think there will be some kind of actual physical revolt against these governments?
You had a question about the people coming to the country. It's free stuff, just like we have a problem here. They come in because they get paid, they get their medical, they get all their freebies. That's why they come. That's their enticement to come. But as far as the governments just keep pushing these people down our throat, they don't really get much resistance. What's going on in England and Europe kind of bothers me, because that seems like to me that here in the United States, things could get a lot worse without anybody doing anything. Mm-hmm. Because I think you got it worse over there than we have here.
North America is a big, huge place, and there's always some place for the white man to run. In Europe, they don't have, especially in Britain. Like I say, I've lived in Britain. I can tell you, they can't run any place. That island is simply too small.
I think there's also a mindset with some people, like you said, we have all these weapons in this country. People think when you resist, it's automatically weapons. They don't do anything. They grumble a little bit. They'll call the representative. Maybe some brave souls will get on the radio and say something, but they don't resist at all. They just go, oh, well, they're coming here. What are we going to do? So we'll be nice to them when they come. I think the government, when they see some resistance, some good, solid resistance, and the people have their mindset, I think they'll back off.
Well, one would hope.
I think they'll back off.
Speaking of resistance, for our two London callers, what kind of political resistance is taking place in the UK right now? Is the BNP or the UKIP, are they doing anything at all?
The BNP has basically collapsed after the 2010 general election, but it's now been sort of like taken over by the National Front again. You remember the National Front? The National Front at its peak in the 1970s, but that's still going. But there's a new project called White Independent Nation started up by a mate of mine, Nick Griffin. He's trying to build small white communities in the whitest area of England.
Kind of what we're doing here in the Northwest.
The United Kingdom Independence Party are actually gaining strength. I've been a member for 23 years. I'm a realist. I believe in space as opposed to race. And quite clearly, We haven't got enough space. And the fact is, there isn't enough space for all these people. And not only that, all of these refugees are not necessarily, and it's been proven in France, are not necessarily refugees. They're terrorists. They're terrorists.
Well, I think about, what, 80% of them are young men of military age?
Yeah. I spent 12 years of my life fighting terrorism. 12 years of my life. I know it's not a long time, but it's a long enough time. I had four of my friends killed, murdered in terrorism actions. And I tell you that these people should not be admitted to your country or my country or any other country. They should be held back in their own countries. I actually salute my former enemy, because I used to be the enemy of Russia. I salute them. Bomb them.
I don't know if your friend told you, but I spent about 2 years in the Rhodesian Army myself. I was out of Llewellyn Barracks in Bulawayo. I remember Rhodesia quite well, and I will always be glad that I was able to see it before it perished.
Harold, Chris said it was Ian Smith who kicked you out of Rhodesia, is that right?
I was actually deported from Rhodesia in February of 1976, myself and two other Americans on the personal order of Ian Smith for basically forming a pro-white political party and so forth. But all of this is ancient history, and we have to move on. We have a very bad tendency in our little movement to look constantly towards the past, and we have to start thinking of the future, because the future right now is pretty grim, and we'd better start building a plan to deal with it.
Ian Smith is dead now.
Yes, I know. It's something I don't really talk about that much. The Rhodesia I knew, I arrived there first in late 73, and it was a thing of beauty. I also lived in South Africa for a while, so I saw South Africa under apartheid. I have, I think, an advantage over most movement people in that I have seen and lived in all-white countries myself. Obviously, Rhodesia and South Africa weren't all-white, but I also lived in Ireland in the 1980s when Ireland was still an all-white country and so forth. But we really have to start looking towards the future. If we don't, we are going to become extinct, physically extinct, I think, within 100 years.
Yeah, I think in the future, in the short term, I'm not optimistic. I reckon things are going to get darker, a lot darker still. But in the long term, I think basically the white race will pull it out at the 12th hour, basically. The 11th, like 11th hour.
We are white people. We are Aryans. We can pull this out of the fire at the 11th hour and the 59th minute if we have to. It's a question of our making the decision that we're going to do it. The question has never been, can we beat this tide of filth back and maintain our existence and maintain our civilization? The question has always been, will we do it?
My estimation for if things continue as they are, I reckon we'll be extinct by 2350. You may think that's a late date, but the way I calculate is our decline began in 1945 with the defeat of Hitler's Germany. And I think if it continues on for 400 years, from 1945 to 2345, roughly give it 400 years for the white race to go extinct fully. Now, the point of no return will, of course, arrive before we go extinct.
The official date for white people in the United States, anyway, to become a minority is 2043. However, the tipping point is a lot closer than that, because we're talking about the median age of the white people who do survive. Now, I'm of the so-called baby boom generation. I'm getting on up there. I'm 62 myself. And I can tell you that the median age of the white population is dropping. I know that's a big problem in Europe. The white birth rate has been dropping for several generations now. That's one of the excuses they use to try and bring in these immigrants is, oh, well, white people aren't having babies. Basically because white women have been corrupted by feminism and the need to maintain a middle-class lifestyle and so forth and so on. So, effectively speaking as well, given our electoral system over here, white people are now an electoral minority, at least on a federal level. Looks like the next elections we're going to have here, we're not only going to have all these waves of millions of mud-colored immigrants voting through some trick or special executive order from our dictator, but also the dictator is planning apparently on opening the prisons and releasing millions of black felons back into society and restoring their right to vote, of course, just in time for the 2016 elections. He hasn't actually made that announcement yet, but it's definitely heading in that direction.
Why not? Let's get them all out and vote for
the Democrats over here, the ruling party. It's almost an open secret that one of the main reasons for this wave of immigrants coming into the United States, we call them New Democrats. The idea is to get them in, get them on welfare, get them beholden to the government, which in this case effectively means the Democratic Party. And then come election time, they all troop into the voting booth and pull the D, sometimes more than once. Democratic political machines in this country have always been notorious for using these tactics. And what we've got, in essence, right now, electorally speaking, in this country is kind of like Mayor Daley's Chicago writ large. What is this I hear about the bedroom tax over in the UK, where you actually have to pay a tax if you don't take in a non-white boarder in your house?
Right. Well, first of all, I'm going to hand you over in a brief moment. I'll say it's an absolute pleasure, and I want to thank you for protecting my family in Rhodesia. And I want to absolutely grateful to not only yourself, but also to the other people from America, because there was quite a few, that actually fought in a war.
Did you ever hear of or meet Corporal John Coey? He was the medic who was killed upon the sharp end. Anyway, he was one of ours. I'm just sorry we weren't able to save it, because I tell people that I know now what it was like to live in the last of the British Empire, and Rhodesia was indeed a land of hope and glory.
I'd like to ask the gentleman from England. Sweden is overrun with immigrants also. They seem to have completely lost their mind. My question is, do you think that the English people will go so far overboard accepting these immigrants that they beat themselves up because they don't think they gave them enough? Do you think that the English people will adopt that mindset too eventually if they keep pushing these immigrants on them? Or will they stand up and fight at some point, do you feel?
No, I feel the English people will keep on accepting the immigrants. This is the larger problem with the white race. The white race is inexorably heading toward extinction, driven by a seemingly incurable death wish. The majority of the white race has a death wish. The will to live is not in the white race, really. So I foresee no resistance coming from the English. We're deliberately committing suicide. We're not accidentally going extinct. We're deliberately doing this to ourselves. We're destroying ourselves.
You don't feel there's a point where they're finally going to say, we've had enough? I don't think we've reached that point here yet in the United States. You guys are further along than we are, right, from what I get from the media.
They don't have any place to run to.
Yeah, that's right.
I know from your census it says you were 62% white, but that's including Middle East and North African as white, and probably some Hispanic in there as well. So you're more like 50% white, whereas we're about 77% white. Like you say, you've got more space. There's been a lot of white flight here, and there's nowhere left to run to. I do foresee an eventual resistance, but possibly after our lifetime. The earliest I see it happening is 2100.
What's it like in some of the cities outside London itself, maybe like Bristol, Cardiff, Sheffield, Manchester, York, etc., up in Scotland? Is it anywhere near as bad as it is in the home counties?
Have you got any more room? And then we can send them.
Actually, we're facing that very problem right now. Obama has decided that he wants to open the doors to the Syrians, and 24 of our governors have asked the federal government not to settle them in their states, but again, that's, you know, what good is that? That's, I think, just rhetorical posturing.
As you've quite rightly pointed out, it's a small island, the United Kingdom of Great Britain, Northern Ireland, and we haven't got too much room. So if you can take some of the bastards, then we'll be extremely grateful.
I know who has plenty of room, and I'm amazed that all these refugees who are allegedly fleeing the horrors of war and all that rubbish haven't tried this. Russia. And it actually would be a lot easier, closer for them to get to than Northern Europe. So I just kind of wonder, why aren't these wonderful refugees who just want to live better lives and get away from the horrors of warfare and blah, 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 why aren't they turning to mighty Mother Russia? Russia has plenty of space. Because the Russians don't put up with that crap, is why.
Yeah, they don't have a death wish.
Yeah.
Why not put them in the Amazon?
South America is mostly mestizo country. That actually would be, in a sense, an ideal solution. Dump them in Brazil and places like that. There are a couple of countries in South America which I consider to be more or less white countries, Chile and Argentina. But Central America and the upper part of the South American continent, if we're looking for space to settle all these millions and millions of wogs, that would be an ideal place because they can mix in with other wogs. But that's not what they want to do. They want to come to these white countries where they can get welfare and get taken care of and get nice free housing, etc., etc. According to what we see over here, when this great exodus started, they were all screaming, no, 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 we don't want to stop in Greece or anything like that. We want to go to the Nordic countries where we can get to free everything.
The part of the white race there, where death wish is the strongest, is the Nordic part. That's the part that Hitler and the National Socialists referred to as the master race. And ironically, it's that part of the white race that is now the most suicidal. The more pure-blooded white a person is, the more suicidal they are.
And I have always noticed something, and maybe there's those that will disagree with this. I've been in the movement for almost 40 years now in various places and times and tendencies and whatnot, and I have frankly noticed that with individual white people, the blonder and more blue-eyed they are, the worse race traitors they are. It's like they have been given this incredible gift from God, and they just want to throw it away. Maybe that's just a personal thing with me, but you would think that someone who has been given the gift of that kind of genetic heritage would want to preserve it, but the exact opposite seems to be true. It's almost like we've got this really strange guilt gene blown into us.
The white race's curse is altruism.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Compassion.
They don't want to hurt anybody. They want to be nice. But that can only apply to your own.
We have to overcome this. Reverend Oliver referred to it as a morbid racial masochism. We have to overcome this pathological altruism, this sort of self-harming that we're doing to ourselves. Whatever's making us do it, we have to find the source and destroy it. So we can recover from the death wish.
Well, I think the death wish is related to something that's described by an Italian proverb, which goes like this. The fish rots from the head down. And the leadership of white societies have been corrupted, I think, by the Jew, and this is the ultimate source for this masochism or excessive altruism toward outsiders, etc.
I believe a lot of the suicidal altruism came to us from the Jew via Christianity, and such like Judaism and liberalism.
Well, it's definitely a Jewish installation. It's a very great mistake to attempt to discuss or analyze anything racial or civilizational as relating to the destruction of white man in the West without speaking of and understanding the Jewish question. You can't discuss what's happening to Western man right now and not discuss Jews any more than you can discuss disease without discussing germs. So that's definitely part of the thing. Interestingly enough, we get a lot of stuff on the internet over here about the Jews of Europe are all shaking in their boots because of all these millions of Muslims coming into their countries. It's almost like their chickens are coming home to roost because they're the ones that started all this a century ago, in August 1914, and finally their past is catching up with them.
I believe wholeheartedly that there is the Jewish, like the Orthodox types, which are absolutely evil, absolutely. Jesus would say that himself. And as he did, he said that their father was the devil, that was actually Shatan, if you want to look into the Aramaic, which I've read.
This isn't an 800 number. This call must be really running you guys up a packet, so whenever you have to go, by all means go. It was really good having you, and I'm hoping we can get some more input from some of our European comrades, especially maybe some Germans or some Swedes.
Can I ask, are you guys using a computer, using Skype to call us? That would be a free call.
We're not Europeans, we're British.
Yes, and you British, are you using Skype to make this telephone call?
Well, I'm using Skype.
Okay, well, if you're using Skype and it's a free call, stay on, of course.
Are you European?
Well, over here, this is really weird. White Americans don't really have any racial sense of themselves as white people, or at least the majority of them don't, unless you're like me from the South. We have a very definite white heritage dating back to the Confederacy and so forth, but your average American, if you ask him about his identity and he says, well, I'm an American, but if you probe a little deeper, he'll say, well, I'm Swedish or German or Italian or whatever his particular ethnic heritage is. And some white ethnic groups have more of a sense of their past than others, but it's only, I think, fairly recently that there is coalescing on this continent a racial consciousness among us of ourselves as white people. Because up until just a generation or so ago, we just didn't think of ourselves like that.
Well, I want to give a contrasting opinion here. I'm 67, so I'm a little older than Harold. And I remember in the 50s when I was growing up that white people considered themselves to be white. Mm-hmm. That was part of their identity. And when black people would bitch about something, white people would say they wish they were white. They want to be white. It was very clear. And when the 60s came along, that sort of thing was attacked officially and unofficially. It was suppressed by various methods. And that's why I said the fish rots from the head down. The problem is that the elites, the people in positions of authority, have been corrupted or blackmailed or assassinated or whatever in order to advance this agenda. And so it starts there. It propagates through the media, through the educational system, and through executive orders and whatever else. But it's people in positions of authority have been corrupted. They've been targeted. And that's how it happens. That's how it flows down to the general population. And the self-image of, am I white? Is that part of my self-image? It used to be. I remember it as a child. Mm-hmm. It definitely used to be in the United States as late as the early to mid-50s. But, of course, as a result of the onslaught beginning at full strength in the 60s, that has changed.
As the politically correct would say today, they self-identified as whites.
Yeah, you know, when I was younger, white wasn't a big thing. It was like a given. We were all white. We didn't really discuss it that much because, hey, we're all white. It's a given condition. And a matter of fact, what we did was, if there was any kind of a racial or where you came from type thing, it was the little quirks. The Italians had their little quirks and the Germans had theirs, and that was discussed. And as far as blacks goes, hey, out of the question.
Well, that was actually what I meant. Yeah, everybody, when I was growing up, we were aware of ourselves as white in the sense of being not niggers. Of course, also, you got to bear in mind, in those days, there was only two races. I didn't actually meet my first Mexican until I went in the Army, the United States Army in 1971, because at least in our part of the country, in North Carolina, we just didn't have that problem. Now, Texas, California, yeah. Of course, nowadays, North Carolina, I think it's like the fifth highest Hispanic population, something like that, per capita, something along that line. It's basically a province of Mexico now. But that didn't exist back in those days. So, yeah, people were aware of themselves as white, but we did not think of ourselves first and foremost as white people. Yeah, you're right. White was the default. White was normal. White was what everybody was, unless you were colored or whatever the term was. Now, you hit the head on something right there, and I think it's caused a lot of the racial discontent in this country and probably in Europe as well. The one thing blacks really want is the one thing that they can never have. They want to be white. We had a lady call once here, and she mentioned that she worked in an office, and the black women in her office are constantly coming in with these weaves that they put on their heads, these wigs and these various hair pieces they do to basically straighten their hair. Is the main characteristic of black women that she's known as they're incredibly envious of white women's hair and that sort of stuff. They want to be white, and it's something they can never have. And I think that is the true source of their rage and their hatred against us, not because of slavery 200 years ago or any nonsense like that. We have something that they can never, ever have. That is why they hate us.
There's a bit of sadness in there for me because I'm not being altruistic, don't get me wrong. But here they are in a culture, in a country, they can never be their true selves. They're always trying to be what we are. And sure, if they try and go back to their roots and their ingrained culture, nothing but trouble for them. Nothing but trouble. The bottom line is they don't belong here. They belong in their own country, do their own thing, evolve in their own time, and leave us alone, please.
Which is the exact opposite of what's happening today. They are being forced into contact with us. They're being forced into white countries. Why don't these refugees go to Turkey? There's plenty of places in Africa that are quite capable of supporting large populations. They've got the resources. They've got the climate. Why is it that they are being forced into white countries only? Only white countries are being forced to accept these huge numbers of immigrants.
Obviously to destroy the white race.
They don't make it into the Asian countries. I don't know of any great quantities of
brown. They're not allowed.
Yeah.
They're not allowed into Mexico. Mexico has some of the strongest and most restrictive immigration laws in the world. In order to become a legal resident of Mexico, you literally have to have, you know, a couple million dollars to bribe the local legislators with or something like that. It's almost impossible to immigrate legally to Mexico and to most of these third world countries. The Chinese had a very brief illegal immigration problem some years ago when North Korea was going through one of their starvation periods. They literally had, I don't know how many, but a lot of North Koreans who were trying to flee across the border from North Korea into China because basically they didn't have anything to eat, and the Chinese just shot them. They just, no, you're not coming in here. I will tell you who else has a remarkably restrictive immigration policy, and that's Israel. Israel, if you're not a Jew, you just don't go to Israel, period. They have a guest worker status because basically they found that they can't rely on the Arabs to do all their manual labor. It's like the bracero system that we used to have in this country. If you're a Filipino or an African, you can come in for 6 months. I think maybe it's like a max a year. You can work. You can collect your money in Israeli shekels. You are restricted to your own sort of quarters in the parts of certain cities like Tel Aviv or Ashkelon or whatever. And you have no political rights. If you put a foot wrong, you're thrown out. They have had a wave of some of these refugees from Africa trying to get into Israel, and at one stage the Israelis pushed them outside the fence into the Sinai and just left them there. And the Egyptians wouldn't take them, and the Israelis wouldn't let them back in, and I think eventually the UN came along and trucked them away some too, probably dumped them in Italy or someplace. White countries are the only people who have these asylum laws. White countries are the only countries that will admit any of these masses of refugees. Yeah, but according to the governments of Europe, you don't have any choice. They're just going to say, screw you, we're bringing these people in, we're giving them welfare and your houses and every other thing, and you don't have anything to say about it. This is where it's going to be interesting for me to see what happens when the white people of Europe finally understand that this is it, this is their fate. There is going to be no hope of any mercy or change in policy on the part of the government. And congratulations, they are now citizens of Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria, wherever. And if they don't like it, tough cheese. And I really am curious to see if there is going to be any even attempt seriously to resist this, specifically to the point of direct action to just make these people get the hell out.
In Ireland, it's already happened, actually, because in Northern Ireland, there was a lot of people from Romania, and they were firebombed. I'm not saying that I agree with that kind of response, but they did. They firebombed them. And this was in South Belfast. And when the news asked them, they said, why did you do this? Is it because they're taking your houses? And they said, no. We just don't like them.
If my memory serves, I think South Belfast is a Protestant area, is it not?
Predominantly, yes. I shouldn't laugh, actually. But I used to live in South Belfast myself. And it was a simple case of, is it because they're doing this? Is it going to take their jobs? Because it's taking their... No, we just don't like them. I thought, classic. We just don't like them.
All I can say is that I hope that our people in Europe can, at the last minute, remember who they are, remember who their ancestors were, and do what has to be done. I know that there have been some incidents in Germany and some other places, Sweden, where these creatures have been burned out, but the government's simply moving them to other accommodation. The only way that this is going to end favorably for the issue of white survival is if physical force is used to make these people leave. And I'm not just talking about the recent wave either. I'm talking about the Muslims and the various WOGs that have been in some of these European countries for three generations. The demographic nature of Europe has to be restored to what it was basically at the turn of the 20th century. There is no way to do that other than by doing it. The thing is, I think everybody understands this, and basically nobody has the balls to be the first. Now, we are trying to offer at least moral leadership in this country through the Northwest Front, and I don't know how successful we'll be. We better or we'll be extinct here as well. I just really am going to be fascinated to see what happens in Europe over the next few years. If nothing else, it's going to kill the tourist industry. If someone wants to see mosques and bazaars, they can go to Istanbul. They don't have to go to Germany.
Harold, why do you place by the extinction of the white race 100 years' time? What makes you give that sort of estimate?
Well, of course, it's an arbitrary figure, but by extinction, I mean the point of no return where there simply will not be, frankly, enough young people, enough young women especially, of childbearing age to replenish the racial stock of the white man. Right now, if every feces-colored individual in the North American continent were suddenly to vanish in a puff of smoke, there would still be enough young white people left to replenish and to build up our numbers again. This is one of the reasons why we need a Northwest Republic. We're like wolves or any other species threatened with extinction. We need a safe habitat. But if a safe habitat could be created, there are still enough of us left to where we could get our numbers back up. Back in the 1950s, the alligators in Florida were almost extinct. Once they were protected, the people had to stop killing them and hunting them for leather bags and meat and whatnot. Now there's nothing but alligators all over about three southern states. So populations can be restored, but not if they fall below a certain level, because you run out of breeding stock. But when I say 100 years, my personal view is that this generation of white children who's being born right now in the teens is probably the last true generation of white children, because they are the last ones who, if they are allowed to do so, there would be enough of them to where they could replenish the white population. Assuming all of this pressure went off and assuming that somehow or other these non-whites could be forced out of our countries, which is the only way it's going to happen. If that happens, I think we'll still have enough breeding stock left to get our numbers up. But beyond that, beyond about 2045, it's very arbitrary to pick a certain date, but at some point we're simply going to fall below that necessary number of replenishment.
Harold, I think serving to that equation is if you can get the white race isolated and have their own territory, we could come back, because those other races, they need us. We've said this before. One of the great weapons that they have against us is the carefree, non-responsible birth rate of the subspecies. They'll outbreed us. If they're mixed in with us, they'll outbreed us. And especially with the corrupt government in this, what they call a democracy, it's the numbers that appoint the leaders. So it's imperative that we get the hell away from them, because that's going to be our demise if we don't get isolated. And as I said earlier in the program, white, there are Aryan civilizations that do great things and grow at exponential rates and wonderful discoveries and everything. And as Hitler said in his book Mein Kampf, the Aryan is the only true genius. That's where everything comes from, all the great breakthroughs.
Well, you British gentlemen were talking about this Nick Griffin's latest project, this WIN thing. Is he having any success at all with that? I would imagine that in Britain there is a natural, organic movement out of these massively non-white cities and into the countryside. How is the countryside as a whole in the UK? Is it still reasonably white?
As he was asking about
that. Yeah, I know. But God bless you and take care.
Okay, you too.
So, Nick, it's not Nick Griffin who's doing Y Independent Nation. It's a guy who's got a name similar to Nick Griffin. It's Nick Grifford.
Oh, Grifford, okay. I was wondering about that. We won't get into Nick Griffin. That was odd. I hadn't heard Griffin was doing it. So, how's he doing?
Yeah, who, Nick Griffin? Or Nick Grifford?
Grifford, the guy who's doing the WIN.
I haven't spoken to him since February of this year, but he's got a few families to move up there to the areas in the northwest of England. And he seems to be making slow but steady progress. He doesn't view violent revolution or voting as options. He just views them, we've got to sort of build our own community. But there is a large movement of white flight in England.
Just to refresh my memory, is it still possible at all to own a firearm privately at all anywhere in the United Kingdom these days? Oh, he's gone. He's gone. Okay. Well,
Scared him off.
Yeah. Richard, I guess it's just us. That was interesting.
Yeah, one thing to come out of the conversations I thought was good, being we don't have it as bad as they do there, we can judge how much more of this people will take before there's a rebellion. Maybe there won't even be a rebellion, who knows?
Sometimes I think we kind of forget that there are still places in this country that are quite livable. Once you get out of the top 125 or so metropolitan areas, there are large sections of flyover country like in Kansas and Iowa and places like that. Of course, here in the Northwest, once you get out of Seattle and Portland, it's quite nice. We have space. And right now, there are still in various places in this country where... wait a minute, here we go. This is Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
Did I just get cut off or something?
Okay, all right. Let me put you back in the group. Okay, our British friends are back. Guys, we actually only have about 3 minutes left because we try to keep this to an hour and a half so that we can cut the conversation down to fit on a single CD. So I'd like to go ahead and just wind it up now. Anything that you would like to say?
Harold, let me ask you something. Am I the only one on right now?
No, the British guy came back.
Might as well wind it up then.
Okay. If they don't have anything to say, what did you want to ask?
I was just going to chew the breeze more about the situation. The end conclusion is only the end situation will be violent, wherever the violence is the non-whites slaughtering us or us slaughtering the non-whites remains to be seen which way it's going to go.
Yeah.
But it will end in bloodshed either way.
What did you want to ask, Richard?
Another time, Harold.
Okay. Right. I hear strange beeping in the background.
Yeah, I got another call coming in.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I'm going to go. So thanks for the show. Thanks
okay.
for having me on.
All right.
Right.
Goodbye.
Take care.
Right. And thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate making the call all the way from London. I will try and clean this podcast up to remove any possible identifying markers because the way that they're going over there, I understand they arrested some woman for not wanting Muslims in her beauty parlor and that sort of stuff. So I will go ahead and I'll clean this up a bit. So hopefully the special branch won't be knocking on your door. Thanks a lot for calling.
Okay, thanks, Harold.
All right, okay.
Good night.
Good night.